Narayanam, chapter 4, text number 23. Bhutair Mahadir Yayma Puro Vibhur. Nirma Yasete Yadamushu Purushaha. Bhunte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmakaha. Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vachamsine. Bhutai Mahadhir Yayumah Puro Vibhur. Nirmayasete Yadamushu Purushah. Bhunte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmakah. Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vachamsi Me. Bhutair Mahadhir Yayumah Puro Vibhur. Nirmayasete Yadamushu Purushah. Bhunte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmakah. Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vachamsi Me. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. It's a very beautiful prayer by Sukadeva Goswami, offering a prayer to the Lord for empowerment. Elsewhere in the same chapter, there is a beautiful verse where he says, Tapasvino dana parayashasvino manasvino mantra vidasu mangala kshemam na vindanti yada vinaya darpanam tasmai subhadra shravase namo namaha. In that verse, he says, Tapasvino, those people who have the capability to perform severe austerities, unlike the common people. And some people who are Dhanashur, Dhanavir, who have the capability to give charity, like Karana, for example, those who give great amount of charity. Tapasvino, Dhanavir, Dhana Para Yashasvino. Some people who have attained reputation and fame, similarly it is manasvino, those people who have the ability to speculate about the absolute truth, the vijnanis, mantra vidha means those who can recite the Vedic mantras very powerfully, pronounce the Vedic chant very powerfully, mantra vidha sumangala means those who have spotless qualities or behavior, as mentioned in the Vedas. So he says, all these people, all their qualities become null and void, he says, if they are not offered in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says, all these different, see, each one of these people is a different category, and they are unique, and they are very outstandingly endowed with these capabilities. And if these are not offered to the Supreme Lord, then he says that it is simply useless. He says. So he says that, I offer my obeisances to you, my dear Lord, who has actually endowed all these people with such capabilities. Because it is the Supreme Lord who has given them these capabilities, so that's why it makes the duty is given in the scripture that all this should be offered back to the Supreme Lord. Because it is given by Him only.
Like in the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, we have this verses, series of verses, where he says, Sve karmani abhirataha, sam siddhim labate naraha, sva karmanatam abhyaccha, siddhim vindati manavaha. Krishna says, everyone by their own duties should offer worship to the Supreme God. Why? Yataha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam. So there he says, yataha pravrittir bhutanam. All living beings come from him, and they are also, most importantly, as said here, endowed with these 16 mortal nature by the Lord. So this is a very important understanding, that the senses that we possess are not ours. They are actually awarded by the Supreme Lord. Like he says, five Panchamahabhuta, and then the five Jnanendriyas, and then the five Karmendriyas, all these things. They are all awarded to the living being at the dawn of creation, as it is mentioned here. They are given by the Lord, which means they are actually created by the Lord and given. All these things, the elements, the 24 elements that are mentioned in Sankhya. So, when we have accepted these things from the Lord, and having accepted these things, we open our eyes to find that I have these abilities given by the Lord. But often people forget who has given me these things. Just as naughty children, they become ungrateful to their parents as they grow up, and they swindle the wealth of the parents and enjoy it themselves. Similarly, the living beings have a tendency that as soon as they attain name and fame and reputation in this tiny world, this tiny earth, which is not even a dust particle in comparison to so many millions of planets in this universe, then one tends to forget the connection. One tends to forget the Lord, that I have taken these things from him. So, that is why Shukadeva Goswami is reminding in the beginning that all these elements are awarded by you. In fact, all these elements were practically dead. They couldn't do any action, any activity, until the Supreme Lord throws his glance on matter. Then the matter is set rolling. Then the matter is made to move and act. The whole material creation is set in motion by the glance of Vishnu. That's why the word Saha Aikshataha, it is said. Saha Asrijata. So, in the Upanishads it is said, when the Supreme Lord puts his glance on the material nature, then the material nature gets activated. Till that point of time, the material nature is in a dormant, dead state. So, one thing is the living entities enter into matter, and the Lord also puts his glance on matter. Then the matter gets activated like this. So, what is the importance of remembering that we have acquired all these things from the Lord? Because by not remembering, this is what happens, as Prabhupada explains here. Unlike a mundane man who is proud of his own capability, he says, as a fully dependent devotee, Shukadeva Goswami invokes the pleasure of the personality of Godhead so that his statements may be successful. So, here, Shukadeva Goswami is begging for the blessings of the Lord to present the truth of Bhagavatam purely to those who are hearing from him. And he is remembering that at the dawn of creation, Brahmaji, the first created living being, also was empowered by the Lord to understand the Chatushloki Bhagavat and also to speak it to Narada. And then it is coming down in the parampara. So just as Brahma was empowered by you, my dear Lord, you empower me also to understand. And it is true for all of us also. We can pray that, O Lord, you empowered Brahma to understand the message of Bhagavat. You empowered Shukadeva Goswami to understand. You empowered Narada. And you empowered all the acharyas down the line. Just as you empowered all of them, please empower me also to understand the message. Because the absolute truth is so difficult for a tiny living entity to understand, it is said, Mushyanti Asurayaha. The very first verse it is said. Even the demigods can be bewildered about the truths about the personality of Godhead. There is a great possibility of getting bewildered. In fact, at one time, when there was dark smoke in the entire creation, then all the demigods left their abodes and started flying here and there. So they come to Brahma. And they say, my dear Lord, we find there is inauspicious omen everywhere in the world. There is smoke. It's smoky everywhere and we don't know the reason why. Of course, then Brahma begins to tell them that the Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu are in the womb of Diti. And they are going to very soon appear. Even before they appeared, they were creating such a trouble. And they were in the womb. And then Brahma started telling the background of the whole thing. He told them about Chatushkumara coming to Vaikuntha, how they were cursed by Chatushkumara, cursed the Jaya and Vijay, and how they fell from Vaikuntha, and they became Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And then Brahma says that, my dear demigods, don't be unnecessarily in anxiety, because if there is danger, there is also protection. Because the Lord is there to protect the devotees. And we don't have to speculate anything, we don't have to worry. And at the time of the Lord will protect them. All of you go back to your abodes and do your duties. Brahma sends them. So, you will find Brahma instructing either his disciples or other demigods many times about how should one approach the Supreme Lord. There is another instance in Bhagavad may find when Lord Varaha comes out of Brahma's nostrils. That time all the demigods are bewildered. Even the great sages and saints, and including Brahma, including all demigods, nobody could understand who this creature was. And everyone started speculating who it might be, who this personality might be. Because demigods also can change forms. Demigods can take animal form or a bird form or a human-like form. So when they saw the creature, they were imagining maybe this, maybe that. Nobody could understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that time also Brahma says, you know, if we cannot understand a particular truth, we just have to fold our palms and pray to the Supreme God. My dear Lord, you are inconceivable. If you wish that I should understand this, please kindly reveal the truth to me. And if the truth is not revealed, you can put it under the category of inconceivable. The Lord's truth, the truth about the Lord is inconceivable. So here a question arises in our mind. Is Lord totally ununderstandable? Or is the Lord understandable? So there are people who say the Supreme Truth can never be described in words. They are impersonless. They say that Supreme Truth is so great that you can never put it in words. As soon as you put in words, that means it is not truth. You are trying to dilute the truth. They say like that. And Prabhupada has a challenging question to them. If you say the Supreme Truth cannot be described in words, then why do you publish bulky volumes of books? And you want other people to read what you are writing? So, then how can that interpretation that you are giving in those books be true? If after all they are also words only. So, certainly the absolute truth is difficult to understand. It is difficult to interpret with our few grams of brain on our own. It is almost impossible, we can say. But the Supreme Truth, though inconceivable, is understandable when the Lord agrees to reveal the truth, as He does through the scriptures. Just like sometimes you find there is a huge heap of sugar and an ant may go and pick up one small grain of sugar. And then eating that sugar, the ant becomes ecstatic, is dancing and going and telling everyone, I have tasted sugar. But what he has tasted is only a small particle of that huge heap of sugar. Similarly, the truth about the Lord is oceanic. And by studying the scriptures and practicing sadhana, we can understand some facets of the Lord. Some of His natures we can understand. And the Vaishnavas, who are called as Rajahamsas, are those who are called as the Paramahamsas. So these Paramahamsas are those who study the scriptures, and they are like the divers in the ocean. Like you dive deep in the surface of the ocean, you get only fishes. But you dive deep in the ocean, you get pearls, Navaratnas. Similarly, you study the Vedic scriptures superficially, you get only Karmakanda, Jnanakanda. But you study the quintessence of all the Vedic scriptures, Bhagavatam. You dive deep in that, then you get pearls. What is that? Ultimate jewel? Love of God. And the nature of the Lord is explained deeply. So Vaishnavas go down deep in this ocean of Vedic scriptures, and they bring out the valuable jewels of realizations of understanding of the relationship between Lord and His devotee. And they distribute it freely for the welfare of all. They do that. So, by hearing from such great souls, there is some possibility of understanding the inconceivable Lord to some extent. There is some possibility. And all such great souls, they come in parampara, beginning from Brahma. And where are they getting this ability to dive deeply and get those jewels of realizations? That ability comes by the empowerment of the Lord. That's what he is saying here. Long ago, Brahma got that empowerment to understand you by your mercy. In the same manner, Sukadeva Goswami is praying, please give me also the ability to understand you. This is a very right state of consciousness of a devotee when one is approaching anything spiritual, not only the scriptures. When you are approaching the deity, we should have the same mood. My dear Lord, I have no qualification to touch you or dress you or put ornaments on you or offer bhoga to you because I am completely impure. But by the mercy of my spiritual master and acharyas in the parampara, I am given this opportunity. So please bear with me, tolerate me for dressing you. That's the right approach in going to the deity altar. If one does not have this attitude, then when one is dressing the deity, one will be shouting, yelling, screaming at the people, because sometimes you see in some temples, in the altar room, people are shouting and yelling and scolding each other, because they don't have the good sense that Lord is present right here. Tad dure, tad vantike, he is right here. He is far away in the spiritual world, he is also here, you can touch him, you can dress him and feed bhoga to him. In the same manner, when we approach the devotees, when we approach the deities, when we approach the Bhagavatam, this is the right mood, that I cannot understand you, but you can make me understand you. Just like we sing that song,
Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatu Me.
Which means, my dear Lord Jagannath, I cannot see you, but if you want, you can empower me to see you. That is possible for you. You can make me see you. That ability is there in you. So, this humble attitude in approaching the Lord is actually the secret of the devotee's realizations in the heart of the devotee. And then Prabhupada writes about how the devotee always thinks of himself as instrumental for anything successfully carried out, and he declines to take credit for anything done by himself. While the godless atheist wants to take all credit for activities, not knowing that even a blade of grass cannot move without the sanction of the Supreme Spirit. This we have heard several times, even yesterday's class we were hearing also. But there is a very strong, deep-rooted tendency in the heart of a conditioned soul to take the credit for oneself and not give it to the Lord. Although we may do a lip service of saying, for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga, all glories to assembled devotees, we may say all that, but what is the proof that we are not taking the credit? What is the proof? Detachment is the proof. If one is totally detached, then one will not chase after this mirage of credits for oneself. Whether we speak lectures, whether we write books, whether we perform some marvelous act in the society of Krishna consciousness, whether we take up some leading projects, whether we do something outstanding that is not commonly easy for anyone to do, we should never take the credit. Like we were in marathon time, devotees had distributed books. So for the first time in Pune temple, we are distributing a lot of books. And then eventually it may increase also. So some of them are naturally outstanding book distributors than others. And it is visibly seen for everyone to see. Outstanding. They stand out from others, like Mount Everest amongst all other mountains. Similarly, you will find some devotees stand out in singing, some devotees stand out in speaking, some devotees stand out in intellectual prowess. And they know it, others know it, the whole world is watching, they are also watching themselves. Now the question is, with what mood or attitude they are watching themselves. So, that is why I quoted that first verse. Tapasvino dana paro yashasvino. That's a very beautiful verse. The capabilities and potentials in us, which we have, are not ours. The moment we claim them to be ours, we will land in trouble. We'll land in trouble. Just like Kaliya came to the Yamuna, and he occupied Yamuna, and was eating snakes and eating fishes, and poisoning Yamuna, creating dirty waters, poisonous waters there. And when the covered boys were coming there, they were all fainting and some of them were dying on the banks of Yamuna. Even a bird flying in the sky would drop dead. But Kaliya was thinking, I am a great personality. Everyone is afraid of me. Similarly, we should always think that my endeavor to accept the credits is creating a lot of trouble to others and trouble to myself also. And such a kind of false pride is poisonous, exactly like the poison of Kaliya. And then Krishna came to remove that poison by dancing on the roots of Kaliya. And then he, of course, Krishna did not kill him. Why? Because our false ego need not be killed. Only the false ego has to be transformed into true ego. So the false ego is what causes this desire to grab the credits. How do we know whether I am after the credits? You can easily see those people who are durena shyavaram karma. Krishna says durena shyavaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya buddha sharanam anvicha kripana afala hetavah. In Bhagavad Gita he says durena shyavaram karma. Keep the desire for credits far away. He's saying, give up this abominable activity. He's calling it as abominable. Shyavaram karma means abominable action. Why? Desiring credits is called abominable in Bhagavad Gita. And keep it far away. Don't even look at it. Don't even touch it, he says. How do we know that we want to grab the credits? Many things, we could say. One thing is our mind will be restless. Constantly contemplating on who is thinking what about me? What do people say? I have done this marvelous act. How many people are talking about it? Are there enough people who are aware what I have done? Or I have to make some arrangement to broadcast my glories to everyone. So we become eager to show people that I have done this, to tell people that I have done this. That kind of desire is there. That is the first desire. After that, if somebody says that, yeah, you have done a great job, but you could have done it better, then we get into a defensive mode. Who said I haven't done better? Come, I'll prove to you that I have done better. So we go into a proving mode and defeating all the misconceptions of others. Whatever we consider as misconception. We want to defeat that and prove to them that I have done. And the mind is in a state of oscillation constantly. And one becomes I-centered. That is another proof when one is desiring credits. I, me, my small kingdom, my small world, like a small frog in the well. I am the frog and I have a well. So we become very, very selfishly oriented, thinking only about ourselves and my name and fame, my credit, my great job that I have done and my opulences. For Krishna has 6 opulences which are unparalleled opulences. But what is our opulence? Our tiny opulence. So, such a person who is greedy for credits, he cannot have any good qualities. It's not possible. Actually, you have to be very clear about this. Taking the scriptures or taking the information base of this world, today we are living in the age of information explosion. You just connect yourself to the internet, any information you can get, anytime. You go to any college student or school student, as soon as I ask them a question, they go to the internet to get download some information. So, we are not expected to become information encyclopedia. Yeah, Vaishnava is not called as information encyclopedia. Vaishnava is supposed to have the necessary realizations and the expression of those realizations with the Vaishnava qualities. These two are the essential things. We have to have proper realization about understanding of one's relationship with Krishna and the devotees, and the realization should manifest in the qualities and behavior of the devotees. Then we are proper devotees. Otherwise, if we have a lot of valuable information, both material and spiritual, collected from various sources, and we are stocking them and we are delivering them to the people, and people are very impressed with us, and such people who are impressed, they will also flatter us, and the flattery will go straight to our head. It will increase our head weight. It will make us proud. It will make us very proud, and that pride will choke our realization of Krishna. It will choke. What is the proof that it is choking? It will aggravate our material desires, and we will see that our mind and senses become restless. We fall prey to sense gratification and material desires. Material desires in the heart and sense gratification in the senses. In this way, one becomes completely swayed by the current of craving for credits. So here, as Prabhupada writes in the beginning here, why do we offer prayers at the beginning of Bhagavatam every day? This is the main reason. By offering these prayers, we are reminding ourselves of the upward connection. That this knowledge that I am going to give people now is not my property. It is the property of the parampara. And if it is the property of the parampara, where is that property coming from? Tene Brahma Kridhya Adhikavye Mukhyanti Atsureya. So he says that the Lord gave in the heart of Brahma the original knowledge. So he should be given the credit. So the purpose of offering prayer is to avoid that forgetfulness. To remember that the credit should be given to him. Subsequently, Prabhupada says here, Lord is himself the father of the Vedanta knowledge. It is he only who knows the factual purport of Vedanta philosophy. So there is no greater truth than the principles of religion mentioned in the Vedas. Like Shivadeva Goswami, he has no desire to become a self-appointed interpreter without authority. That is the way of explaining the Vedic knowledge, technically known as parampara system or descending process. The Vedic truths are all perfect descriptions of the factual truth without any mistake or illusion. And Shukadeva Goswami wants to present the truth of creation not as a metaphysical theory or philosophical speculation, but as actual facts and figures of the subject. You see, this is another reason why we pray. Because we have a tendency to use our senses to decipher the truth. Our senses all have 4 defects. So if we tend to look at the truth with our senses, we are likely to be mistaken. For example, scriptures say many truths which may not be acceptable to our mind and senses. But we have to present them without any adulteration, as it is. When Srila Prabhupada once went to Kurukshetra, North India, there was one Gauriral Nandaji, who welcomed Prabhupada there in Kurukshetra. He took him around. When Prabhupada went with him, Prabhupada understood how big this man was in Kurukshetra. Of course, he took Prabhupada to the lake, and this was the main man who had made all the banks of that lake. He had made like a beautiful big pond. If you go to Kurukshetra even today, you will find. And they were also building ghats there. And he was the main person supervising the whole thing. In fact, he was the developer of Kurukshetra city. Many developments he had done. For example, he had arranged for pipeline of water to be brought for irrigation purposes by talking to the government authorities. He had done that. He was building this banks of this pond and everything. And there is a place called Jyotisar where as Krishna Arjuna chariot is made, where Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, that spot. So this man had done a lot of development work for the welfare of the people of Kurukshetra. And then Prabhupada went, crowds of people were glorifying him. In fact, if you go to Kurukshetra, you will find, even in his times, there was a huge murti of this Gaurilal Nandaji kept there, even when he was alive. It's like he kept Gandhi statue or something. His statue was kept. And he had many, many followers who were all admiring him as a statesman, as a leader. He was also considered a spiritual leader amongst them. Because he always would say some nice things from Bhagavad Gita and different scriptures. So when Prabhupada went there, because he Prabhupada was looking for a land in Kurukshetra. So Nandaji had said, I can show you some land. So he showed Prabhupada a land right next to the lake. And Prabhupada was thinking that he is going to donate. But then he said, no, Swamiji, you have to pay and purchase it. And Prabhupada was not at all impressed. Anyway, he took Prabhupada to some 2-3 more lands in other places also. And Prabhupada saw all of them. And they came back in the evening time, they came back. So, this Nandaji, he was telling Prabhupada, he started speaking. Actually, many people when you see the big shots and politicians and big people, they have a tendency to talk a lot. Like when you go to them, they don't let you talk, they talk more. And quite often what they talk is not something that makes much sense many times. Because they are not so well informed. And they talk something out of their own speculation, and they are always surrounded by some followers. Who always keep on putting salute. Good morning sir, they are yes men, who keep on glorifying them. So Prabhupada also saw, Gaurilal Nandaji had so many followers, wherever he went, they went around with him. And they were telling Prabhupada and Prabhupada disciples, glories of Nandaji. What all he has done there in Kurukshetra, how great soul he is and everything they were telling. Anyway, Prabhupada sat with him one to one. They sat in the evening in a garden. And Nandaji started talking, saying that, Swamiji, I think the youth of India, youngsters, should be properly given sanskaras. It is so important. You see, this Bhagavad Gita was spoken and it is such an important literature. And I feel that, Indians have forgotten it. And they have to be awakened and they have to be given this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So, Prabhupada appreciated him. He said, that's very nice. And we have to give Bhagavad Gita as it is true. But you have to present the Bhagavad Gita as it is. And then in the course of Prabhupada's talking, Prabhupada told them that this Bhagavad Gita comes in parampara. And originally it was spoken to Vivaswan. And Vivaswan gave it to Manu. Manu gave it to Ikshvaku, he was telling. So when Nandaji heard it, he said, Swamiji, I have little suspicions and doubts about Bhagavad Gita. He said, do you really think that Krishna must have spoken to sun god? Do you think somebody called sun god exists? Vivaswan. And Prabhupada said, yes, if Krishna says he spoke to Vivaswan, certainly there is sun god. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the Jivatma, is not burnt by fire. It's not, washed by water or burned by fire. So, which means the Jivatma is imperishable. And it can be given a body in which it can also exist in the sun. And Prabhupada said, yes, in moon, in sun, and all the planets there are living forms. So when Nandaji heard it, he sat back in his easy chair and thinking whether that could be really true or not. And then Prabhupada didn't argue with him or counter-argue with him, but he presented the facts very calmly. Prabhupada told him that there can be living forms everywhere in this universe because Jiva is called Sarvagata. He is everywhere in this universe. And Prabhupada said, nothing of the truth spoken by the Lord can be false. If he says that he gave it to verse 1, surely he has given to verse 1. Verse 1 is sun god, and there are many, many living beings, even in the sun, and their king is verse 1, and such a great civilization can exist in not only sun planet, it can exist in all the planets. In any planet it can exist. And Prabhupada said, what is the power of our senses to understand these things? We always consider whether I can understand or not. If something, like the other day I was in Ujjain, I was giving a lecture, the devotee who was organizing the program, so that devotee was telling me, that Prabhuji, many are new people. Although they are living in Ujjain, they don't have faith in God. Many of them. So you speak something very basic, he was telling. Anyway, I spoke, at the end of the lecture, many of them said, one gentleman said, he said, Swamiji, last 35, 40 years, I was believing in Big Bang Theory, and today, my Big Bang Theory was exploded now. He said, I believe now firmly that, you know, there is a Supreme Being beyond, and he was telling. So one Mataji was asking, she said, now I also, I am very convinced about this fact that ultimate God must be Krishna only, because he is full in six opulences. Yeah, as you said. But then how do we account for the other demigods? Where are they? She asked me. Because she said, I go in a plane above in the clouds and I don't find any demigods there. You know, this is the way she is looking for demigods. Where do they exist? I said, there are 14 planetary systems. And there are higher planetary systems, Bhulok, Svalok, Mahalok, Ganlok. And we cannot reach them with our planes. But there are devadas in different planets. So many people, when it comes to God, understanding of God, their approach is so narrow-minded and so childish. You see like that. Simply they apply the speculation. Similarly, I look at the sun and I think it's a fiery ball. You know, now if I touch fire, it is so much burning. If somebody lives in sun, they will be burnt out. How can they live? This is the way they calculate. How foolish it is. See, if God has created us, He is our Father, can't He give us a body to exist in fire? Can't He give us a body to exist in water, like the fishes are existing? He can give us a body to exist anywhere, any place. So, Prabhupada explained to him, and then Maharishi started slowly considering and becoming more convinced after hearing from Prabhupada. So, Harishchandra Prabhu, in one of the articles in Transcendental Diary, he writes about this. He says, a very nice interpretation to this. He says that many Indians, although they profess to be having faith in Bhagavad Gita and they are following the Vedic ways of teaching, when it comes to accepting the truths as it is given in Bhagavad Gita, they have hesitation. They don't have full faith. And not only that, not only accepting the truths given in Gita to the heart, to apply those truths in their life and give their heart to Krishna, and give their lives, give their wealth, give their property, everything to God and surrender to God, they cannot do that. Although they claim to be having faith in God. So he says this point. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada, he had innocent and pure faith in Krishna and in Krishna's teachings. And Prabhupada never interpreted anything. As it is, whatever the truths are given in scriptures, he spoke it plainly. As it is, he gave to the people with full conviction, with full faith. And it had a profound effect on the people to whom he spoke the truth like that. And what was the effect? It transformed their hearts. It transformed their lives. It made them devotees of Krishna. It could give them the detachment and determination to cast away all the material allurements of the world. And simply head towards the spiritual world. It gave such a determination to all the people. Why? Because the Acharya is presenting the truth as it is, and the disciple is accepting the truth as it is, and the result is one gets Krishna. That's the result. On the other hand, there are so many people like this Nandaji in India who claim to be social welfare workers for the holy places or something. And they are speaking, carrying a Bhagavad Gita in the hand, speaking half truths. Because they, when it comes to the Bhagavad Gita truth, whatever they like, they take it. And they quote those shlokas. But then whatever truths are not verifiable by their senses, are difficult to accept, they conveniently avoid those truths. By giving some allegorical, explanation, or giving some false interpretation to those truths. So in this way, he got a very nice commentary to this pastime. So that's why he says here, Prabhupada, the Vedic truths are all perfect descriptions of the factual truth without any mistake or illusion. So, a humble devotional servitor of the Lord has no desire to become a self-appointed interpreter without authority. So, if we have a tendency to speak from the scriptures to increase our own name and fame, if that is our goal, we are likely to become interpreters. Why? Because we have a fear to tell the truth to people. Because we ourselves have no faith. Then how will we tell the truth to others? You can see, even after coming to the Krishna consciousness movement, there is a likelihood that some people may not believe in everything spoken in Prabhupada's books. Why? Because that is an impurity. Lack of faith. So if we lack faith in something, we cannot give to others. Like there was one of our students who was preaching in a big famous university. So he, on my push, as I often give push to anyone, he was telling that, Prabhuji, because you are telling, I will go and distribute some books. He distributed some books and got some boys and girls. And he started a program and he gave Discover Yourself 2-3 sessions. After which he had to introduce chanting. But he had no faith in chanting himself. He was chanting some rounds. So, but he was very surprised to see that the audience were very happily receiving chanting. They were asking, please tell us how to chant, how to concentrate and everything. But he himself was thinking, no, you don't have to start chanting now, I will introduce it later after some classes. You are saying. They said, no, you may not be interested, but we are interested. You teach us. So, you can see that sometimes, actually preachers try to give some interpretation to pacify the audience, thinking that they may not be able to develop faith, but they are developing faith more faster than the speaker also, many times. Because there is Paramatma in the heart of everyone, who instills the faith in their hearts. It is not that we are giving faith. They already have the Lord in their heart. According to their sincerity, the Lord will give them the buddhi, dadami buddhi yogam tam. And we have to become instruments of the acharyas of parampara. To just take the truth to them, and then they will take this truth, and they will seek the refuge in the Lord in their heart. And the combination of this Chaitya Guru and External Guru will help them to realize the truth. So, we learn a good lesson here, that never try to become a self-appointed interpreter of Vedic truths. Actually, Prabhupada says like this, but I think it is like that. Don't say that. Who are you to think? We have to think as the acharyas are thinking. If acharya is saying the truth is like this, we have to accept the truth. Especially the very vital truths that are being spoken in the Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita. And when we become a self-appointed, as Prabhupada says here, when we become a self-appointed interpreter without authority, especially when we get accolades from many people, especially when we get praises, like this Nandaji was surrounded by so many people, yes men, yes sir. Many people start saluting him, surrounding him, and he gets some following. Actually, in this world, to get followers is not a very big thing. The politicians are having followers. Spiritualists and religious people are getting followers. Everyone is getting their own followers, a bunch of followers. So when the followers are doing jayjayakar, then the pride goes to the head. And one thinks, I am a great soul. And now I am a great soul, so I am an acharya. So one becomes a self-made, self-effulgent acharya. And then one thinks, now I can. So Prabhupada was telling one of the Bhaktisansaraswati's disciples, in his books, he put Bhaktisansaraswati photo. Please, all of you keep your mobile in silent mode. Anyone? You should put a board outside. Nobody should enter the temple with mobile on. Did you just switch off the mobile or put it in silent mode? So, you can tell him to go far away and talk. What was he saying last time? Bhakshan Saraswati, one of the disciples, had put a picture of Bhakshan Saraswati, and next to him he had put his own picture. And in that picture, he had put a halo around his head. And Prabhupada said, just see. He is thinking he is more enlightened than his guru also. There is no halo around guru's head, and there is a halo around his head. Just see. So, in fact, somebody had drawn Prabhupada's picture with a halo around his head. Prabhupada told them to remove it. Prabhupada didn't appreciate it. Why? Because we should not think we are more intelligent than the acharyas, and we can become a self-appointed interpreter. So does it mean one has no right to ask questions to the acharyas about a particular explanation about the truth? Actually, we have the right to ask questions. In fact, Prabhupada writes in one of the Bhagavatam purports, doubting is a function of intelligence, he says. In fact, Krishna actually said to Arjuna, Arjuna, I spoke this knowledge to Vibhaswan. And Vibhaswan gave it to Manu, Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. Immediately Arjuna put a sudden break there. He said, Krishna, how am I to understand that you gave the knowledge to Vibhaswan? Actually, Arjuna had no doubt that Vibhaswan existed. Like this, Nandaji had doubt. Arjuna was not having doubt like Nandaji. Arjuna had prayed that Vibhaswan exists, but only Arjuna's problem was what? Vibhaswan existed long ago. And how did he give the knowledge to him? Which goes to show, it's not that Arjuna is argumentative or Arjuna is doubting Krishna, so he's an atheist. No. So a devotee can also have doubts. In fact, inquiring and asking doubts and clarifying doubts with the desire to get enlightened and to have a proper view to understand is not improper. It is acceptable. But one shouldn't boast oneself to be like a self-effulgent acharya giving wrong interpretations and explanations to scriptures by one's own speculative mind. The speculation should be avoided, which is very dangerous. That is why here Shukadeva Goswami, before speaking the truth, he is praying to the Lord, you enlightened Brahma. Because even Brahma can be bewildered, because Brahma is also one of the demigods. Mukhyanti Yatsuraya. The Brahma Vimohan Leela, Brahma was bewildered. And Indra Vimohan Leela also, in which Indra was bewildered. Lord lifted the Govardhan Hill and Indra was defeated. Lord actually bewildered Shiva also by becoming Mohini, and Shiva had to run after Mohini. So what to speak of the smaller demigods? What to speak of the sages and saints in this world? What to speak of us? Such tiny creatures, struggling with our mind and senses. So, there is a very great likelihood of getting bewildered about the absolute truth. Like when we read the scripture, if something is difficult to understand, we shouldn't think, I know better. You know, I know, this is my interpretation or my explanation. Actually, that I am mine, when it comes, then the ahankara has come. Whenever we have some interpretation, we have to say, you know, I am feeling something which this acharya says, and this acharya is saying different thing. Why these two are different? Can somebody explain to me? Then it is meaningful. Actually, even to make an argument, we have to take shelter of an acharya. Like, if the Prabhupada is saying like this, my Guru Maharaj is saying like this. Now, which one is true? How do I understand? It's likely sometimes that two Vaishnavas are saying the same thing from two different angles of view. It's possible. Because sometimes the same, so like Prabhupada says, if you read this section where Chitraketu is going in the Akash Marg, you know, and then Shiva and Parvati are sitting, Parvati is sitting on the lap of Shiva and he is giving a class on Vairagya, and Chitraketu laughed, you know. So very beautiful explanation Prabhupada gives there. One angle of view Prabhupada is saying that, you know, Chitraketu should not offend Lord Shiva because Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam, Vatashambhu. He can speak on Vairagya while having Parvati so close to him because he is never agitated. So one should never offend the Vaishnava. That is one angle of view. Another purpose is saying that, you know, Chitraketu never offended Lord Shiva. Why? Because they both are Vaishnavas. Sometimes one Vaishnava may joke with another Vaishnava. So Chitraketu himself was surrounded by so many Vidyadhara women. And with them he was chanting the holy names. Surrounded by so many beautiful young women. And then on the other hand, Shiva was sitting with Parvati and giving class on Vairagya. So both are Vaishnava friends, you know, joking with each other.
Prabhupada writing that.
But who misunderstood Chitraketu? Parvati. So Lord Shiva told her, Parvati, you may be beautiful, but more than you, Chitraketu is beautiful. Why? Because of his qualities of tolerance. Just see, even after you spelled a curse for him to become a demon, still he tolerated it. He's more beautiful. So, even within Prabhupada purports, you may find sometimes two, three different angles. That is why we can never say that this is the only explanation. Other than this, everything else is wrong. It's not like one or zero. It's not like that. There may be many explanations to the same pastime. And that is what is when we read the literatures like about Bhishma, Bhishma's relation with Krishna, there are so many explanations given. So, when we read the scriptures properly and we hear from Acharyas, we understand there is so much depth to it. There is so much of depth. It's better that we surrender to the explanations of the Acharyas and hear from them. And even to take a stand, we should be able to cite evidences, even if we want to take a stand. We should not take a stand on our own. We should never say that it is my stand, I am thinking like this. No. We are very tiny to have our own thoughts, because we cannot actually see through the truth of the scripture. That's what Prabhupada is saying there. No desire to become a self-appointed interpreter without authority. And then the later part of the purport, Prabhupada is saying, see these two things he's saying. The greatest man of science can present everything very beautifully, only in so far as the spirit life is there, or in so much as the spiritual touch is there. Which means, spirit life is there means, when Atma enters the dead matter, then the body becomes living. Then the body is beautiful, it can function and everything. And the Supreme Spirit is the touch of Paramatma, who is the inspirer. I read an article in a scientific book. The title of the article was, Who Did First? That was the title. Who Did It First? That was the title. So, in that article he says, you know this anthill you have seen? The anthill is made by the termites. They say that the termites don't have eyes. They cannot see, they are blind. But the termites make this huge anthill which has many, many scales. So the air comes inside, and the cooling air comes inside. And then the air at the bottom, the hot air, it evaporates and it goes up. It goes from the top. It goes like this. So when it goes like this, the whole chamber becomes like air conditioned or cooled. Actually, the air conditioner was designed after seeing the anthill only. Scientists found out how these termites are doing. And they also made scales similar to that. So he's asking, who did it first? So the termites did first, and then the air conditioner companies did second. Similarly, he says in that article, if you see the birds, if you see the bird wings, at the end of the wing, they have something like a finger kind of thing. If that is not there, the wings will have problem. Similarly, the wings also have some small, it's called as a slope, they call it. Actually, if you take a wing and study, the same type of wing is made in the aeroplanes. If you travel an aeroplane, you will find one particular portion opens like this, and the plane is landing. So that is made after seeing the birds. They have done a very good imitation of the bird's wing. If you have studied the theory of buoyancy, in flotation and buoyancy, we study in hydraulics and fluid machinery, we study that. If you take the object, they have designed the, what do you call that, a steam line, the fin kind of thing, for the passage of the air flow and everything, it's all designed. It's called as the height. What should be the height, what should be the angle, the slope, you will study in buoyancy. These are all studied after doing research on the birds for many, many years. They made the planes. So again, the same question, who did it first? The bird did it first and scientists did second. Similarly, you will be surprised, you take a mouse, you catch it from the dairy room, and then you put it in the market yard. You put it in the market yard, from market yard it can come back here. Do you know that? How the mouse is able to come back? It will find number 4 Tarapur Road, Kunjibari Temple. It will find, it doesn't catch any PMT bus or something. comes on its own. How is it able to come? But they have the ability to find out. So when the birds are leaving their nest in the morning, they go to far, far away places, right? And after getting some food, how do they come back home? You know, there are migrating birds which go from one pole to another pole. They go from North Pole, South Pole. Again, when they return back after a few months, they come to the exact home from where they left. How are they able to come? The scientists are very curious to know. Now they have found out that the birds have a map in their head. They have a map. So that map actually sends them back. Not only the birds, the bees also have. Ever since the mobile company started, the bees are losing track of their homes. Because they send out a signal by which they find out their homes. They come. Now because of the mobile waves interfering with them, the bees are losing their home, and because of it they are saying that there is not going to be much honey available in the future. Because the bees collect the honey, but they don't know where to go back and put it. So, because in nature they have that system, inbuilt system is kept in them like that. Also there is an electric fish. 500 types of electric fishes are there. Do you know? 500 different types of electric aquatic fishes. They have different voltages of electricity. Some of them can give out 350 volts. So where are they getting these abilities from? That's why he's saying, the Prabhupada is saying here, the greatest man of science can present everything very beautifully, only in so far as the spirit life is there, or in as much as the spiritual touch is there. Lord is situated as localized Paramatma in every individual being. Hence everything is done by him very beautifully. The beautiful arrangement behind all mental manifestation is therefore made possible by the energy of the Lord. And the individual living entity can only pray to the Lord to understand it properly. Sukadeva Goswami prays for the mercy of the Lord, not only for being helped personally in presenting the truth, but also for helping others to whom he would like to speak. Here he is not only praying for himself, he is saying to the Lord, my dear Lord, please give me the shakti to speak the message properly. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, the Lord placed the conch on his head and he could speak choice poetry. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, Lord empowered him to speak very wonderful poetry. Although they both were small children, 5-year-old children, giving such wonderful class. Such wonderful verses they spoke. Similarly, so it's called Uttama Shloka, which means choice poetry. That poetry which comes from the tongue of a devotee being empowered by the Lord. That's called as Uttama Shloka. So that is one prayer he's making. Please give me your mercy so that I can say something meaningful, so that others will benefit from my speech. We should never desire that, my dear Lord, please give me some power by which I will impress all these people and they will know how great I am. That is not the right prayer. Please, my dear Lord, give me the ability to say something which will actually reach the hearts of these people, so they will apply those principles and they can come closer to you. Ultimate goal is to bring everyone closer to you. That is the right prayer. And he is also praying that give them the ability to understand also. Give me the ability to speak, give them the ability to understand you. This is an even more greater prayer. Just like Prahlad Maharaj is saying, my dear Lord, all over the universe, let all living beings become non-envious, he is saying, and let them all become happy. Because of envy, they are all suffering. Let them become free from envy and become happy. This kind of praying for others is far superior to praying for oneself. So Shivaji Goswami is praying to Lord to empower him with his mercy and to speak and to empower others to get the ability. Because generally, manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hi upadrita. We are dull for spiritual life and spiritual subject doesn't enter our heads very easily. So in one sense, it's a blessing of Sukadeva Goswami that he is praying for us, that we also become empowered and we write about this dullness, to understand this great spiritual subject matter. So these verses are very wonderful, what Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. And then when Brahma is speaking, you will find how he is scolding his son Narada boy. Again Brahma, you will find, adores the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also presents his insignificance, how tiny I am. We have to speak about our insignificance. More important than that is to feel about our insignificance. Because it's sometimes possible to say to others with the mouth, I am a humble devotee, I am a small devotee. It's all your mercy, all glories to humble devotees. We may say with the lips as a lip service, but we may not feel it inside. Time will tell whether we are feeling or not. As the years progress, whether we are getting closer to Krishna or we are going far away from Him, that will show with what attitude we are entering all of our services. Right from the time we get up in the morning till night, what is my consciousness? Am I seeing that all the acharyas are behind me, Krishna is above me, and I am simply being empowered like a play toy? I am a puppet in their hands. My speaking, my acting, my doing small and great things, they are actually the powerhouse or a prime mover. I am simply an instrument. If you don't have the consciousness, very soon we will find ourselves stripped off of that mercy. So the mercy is like the power supply. It's given and it is taken away. It is given sometimes. So when the power supply is given, you can find the machine is active or the fan is active. When the power is cut, it stops. Similarly, when the mercy connection is cut off, then one becomes actually insignificant. Actually, when one considers oneself insignificant, one can do very great things. When one is cut off from the mercy, one actually becomes insignificant, good for nothing. It's like a finger cut off from the hand, or a hand cut off from the body. When the part and parcel gets cut off from the Lord, then one cannot do anything valuable to the world. So this prayer, last yesterday's purport and this purport, it hits us and it reminds us. Never become proud. Always remember that what you possess is not yours, it is Lord's. So this should be our meditation. In one of the previous purport, Prabhupada says, a devotee understands all the conclusions of the scriptures while being in a state of trance. What is a trance? He's talking. That is the devotional attitude that comes by rendering devotional service. When you render devotional service, gradually you will get a devotional realization of, I am servant and the Lord is the master. In fact, I am servant of everyone. In that, the devotee is in a sort of trance, Prabhupada writes, few purports before. And in that trance, all the truths, conclusions of truths are revealed to a devotee. Not by intellectual gymnastics, the truth is going to be revealed. Not by one's own ability to speculate, the truth will be revealed. Not by intellectual progress, but only by that devotional attitude. When the trance of submissive surrender comes, then how the truth will be revealed is very miraculous, but it is done. Mercifully it is done by the Lord. Antasimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Prabhupada ki.